Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Chairman of the Board, Senator George Mitchell.
Good morning. Welcome to the 2006 Annual Shareholder Meeting of the Walt Disney Company. This is a very exciting time in the history of this remarkable company. Today you will hear from President and Chief Executive Officer Bob Iger about the broad range of initiatives currently underway, and from Chief Financial Officer Tom Stagg about Disney's recent strong performance. After Tom speaks, I'll return to the podium to conduct the business portion of the meeting. Following that, we will entertain questions from you regarding your company. The company's board of directors is charged with overseeing the management of the company in the interest of you, the shareholders. We on the board take this responsibility very seriously. Over the past several years, we've worked hard and made many changes in order to maintain a best practices standard for corporate governance. We're proud of our governance practices, but we recognize that good governance is an ongoing process and that we must continually assess and adapt our guidelines and procedures. Consistent with that approach, last summer, your board became one of the first in the nation to require directors to submit their resignations if their re-election is not supported by a majority of the votes cast. The board currently consists of 13 members, 11 of whom, or 85%, are independent. This includes two new independent directors who joined the board in December. Later this year, when the Pixar acquisition is successfully concluded, we'll be adding an additional member, Apple CEO Steve Jobs, who is one of the most respected and innovative business leaders in the world. It is now my pleasure to introduce the members of the Walt Disney Board of Directors who are here today. It's an impressive collection of diverse leaders, many with a global perspective from the fields of business, education, technology, and the media. I'm honored to work with them. I ask the directors to remain seated until after I've completed the introductions. Then I'll ask all of them to stand together. John Bryson is the Chairman, President, and Chief Executive Officer of Edison International, one of the country's major energy providers. John Chen is a true entrepreneur. He serves as Chairman, CEO, and President of Sybase and brings great expertise about new technology and about business opportunities in Asia. Judy Estrin is the former Chief Technology Officer of Cisco Systems and currently is Chief Executive Officer of Packet Design, the most recent of several pioneering companies she has formed in the field of high technology. Bob Iger, of course, is Disney's President and Chief Executive Officer. Fred Langhammer is retired CEO of Estee Lauder and continues to serve as Chairman of Global Affairs of the Estee Lauder Company. Baldwin Lewis is President and Chief Executive Officer of Sears Holding Corporation, the parent company of Sears Roebuck and Kmart. Monica Lozano is President and Chief Operating Officer of La Opinion, the largest Spanish-language daily newspaper in the United States. Robert Matchelot is interim CEO and chairman of the Clorox Company. Previously, he served as vice chairman of the board and chief financial officer of the Seagram Company, and before that was head of worldwide investment banking for Morgan Stanley. Father Leo O'Donovan is president emeritus of Georgetown University, where he is also taught as professor of theology. John Temper is the former chief executive officer and board chairman of Procter & Gamble, having retired in 2003 after serving that outstanding company for 40 years. He is currently Chief Executive Officer of the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. Gary Wilson is Chairman of Northwest Airlines. Would all of the directors please stand and be recognized? This is a wide-ranging and experienced group of men and women. We bring different backgrounds and perspectives to our deliberations, but we share in common our determination to serve the interests of our shareholders by maintaining Disney as the leader in providing quality entertainment to a world that needs it now more than ever. I would also like to recognize three former directors, Ray Watson, Irwin Russell, and Director Emeritus Roy E. Disney. We're pleased to have Roy and his wife Patty here, and I would ask Ray, Irwin, Roy, and Patty to please stand and be recognized. On behalf of the entire board, I thank all of you here today for coming, and most important, I thank you for your support of and your faith in this extraordinary company. We're very grateful to you.
Am I mic? I'm mic. Technology. Thank you. That is what Disney is all about. Gleaming castles, lovable characters, great television and motion pictures, and incredible experiences that create memories that last a lifetime. These timeless, vibrant symbols of creativity and imagination are the reason Disney continues to be the most beloved family entertainment company in the world. Good morning to all of you. It's a pleasure to be here in Anaheim, especially as we celebrate Disneyland's 50th anniversary. But first things first, I'd like to start by mentioning a recent acquisition that received, well, a fair amount of attention. Now, I know what you're all thinking. When it comes to classic characters and great storytelling, nothing quite compares to Oswald the Lucky Rabbit. After 78 years, we had a bit of fun bringing Oswald back to the place where he belongs. Now, I know this is a small gesture, but it speaks volumes about our commitment to honor, respect, and appreciate our past. And don't worry, I promise to talk about Pixar a little bit later in the presentation. It's a privilege to stand before you today as your new CEO, and as the sixth person in more than 80 years to fill this role, I'm honored, energized, and more than just a little bit optimistic about your company and its future. This is not just another company. Disney occupies a very special place in the hearts and minds of people around the world. And everything we stand for really comes down to one quality inherent in all things Disney, from our theme parks to motion pictures to television and beyond, and that's the ability to forge common bonds among uncommon people through a universal language of hope, optimism, and fantasy that transcends cultures and borders. That's why creating high-quality entertainment is the number one priority for the company today. From the global hit Narnia to the hit television series Lost to Mary Poppins and Tarzan on stage to thrilling sports coverage on ESPN to Disneyland, which I'm proud to say has never looked more beautiful than it does today. And I hope all of you get a chance to experience that for yourselves, because I know we put tickets in your hands on your way into the arena this morning. Now, as a result of our creative strength in fiscal 2005, the Walt Disney Company is poised to deliver, or posted rather, double-digit earnings growth in 2005, and given current expectations, we plan to deliver double-digit growth on average through at least 2008. This kind of growth,
thank you.
This kind of growth is made possible through the commitment of our 130,000 cast members and employees worldwide who work tirelessly to create special memories and experiences for our guests and customers every day. Over the past 6 months, I've met tens of thousands of our cast members around the world, and their talent, enthusiasm, and dedication only reinforces my belief that we've got the best team anywhere. And together, we continue to push the boundaries of our imaginations with memorable characters and exceptional storytelling, coupled with the wonders of technological innovation. And now we're reaching more people, more often, in more places around the world. Now, to build on that, and to ensure our growth over the long term, we have put in place three strategic priorities that have been adopted by all of our businesses. And they are creativity and innovation, the application of new technology, and expanding the breadth and depth of our businesses on a global basis. First and foremost, as I mentioned earlier, nothing is more important than creating high-quality entertainment. It generates value for our shareholders and connects us to audiences and our customers and guests around the world. And this is very important, it differentiates us. In today's world, people are faced with a dizzying array of choices, and thus it's extremely important to deliver quality entertainment that rises above all else. We must invest appropriately to do so, and we must attract and retain the best creative minds in the world by fostering a rich, supportive, and collaborative environment where creativity can thrive. That's what enables us to set attendance records at our parks, or to have films that gross over $800 million in box office, or to have the number one sports brand, or to have 5 of the top 10 shows in primetime network television. Second, we must use technology to drive growth by taking advantage of the numerous new ways to deliver content to people around the world by using it to enrich the consumer experience. Launching television shows on the iPod platform, making KABC News available in high-definition television, giving you sports video on an ESPN mobile phone, or taking you on a thrilling journey into space are just many examples of these. We are witnessing tremendous expansion in platforms that deliver content to people around the world, and consumers are being presented with exciting new ways to consume media in their homes and, of course, on the go. In turn, distributors and consumer electronics manufacturers cannot succeed without great content and the world's most in-demand brands. Our investment in quality content and our commitment to move it onto these new platforms is designed to respond to that dynamic and to use it as a significant growth initiative. Being at the forefront of technological change will allow us to stay connected to our consumers, but it may also necessitate a departure from old rules and practices and the development of new business models. The riskiest thing we can do as a company is to maintain the status quo. We have to experiment strategically. We also have to invest wisely. And while we may not always bat 1,000 with some of these new initiatives, our company's future depends on them. The future of the company and its ability to grow depends on our ability to break from the status quo. Political, technological, and economic developments around the world are also creating great potential for us. And while there are numerous challenges that require patience and a fair amount of good strategic thinking, there are countless opportunities. Disney is the number one name in family entertainment worldwide and one of the most recognized companies anywhere. This presents us with a competitive edge, and we have to take advantage of that. The opening of Hong Kong Disneyland and the launch of the Disney Channel in India are just a few of the examples that we have in this direction. We also extend a consumer-focused approach across all of our businesses, and it's critical to stay in touch with today's consumers who are more sophisticated, tech-savvy, and have more authority than ever before over when, where, and how they enjoy their creative content. It's what keeps us ahead of emerging trends. After all, at Disney, it's not about meeting expectations. It's about exceeding them. And we believe a focus on those strategies will create more value for our shareholders, examples of which you're going to see throughout this presentation. They're evident across the World Disney Company, from our media networks, our parks and resorts, our consumer products businesses, and of course our studio entertainment business. So let's start with the media networks. At ABC, Quality Entertainment has driven a remarkable turnaround and great results for the television network in prime time. Take a look. This season, half of the top 10 shows among young adults are on ABC, including such great series as Lost, Desperate Housewives, Grey's Anatomy, and Extreme Makeover Home Edition. And Dancing with the Stars was another great success for us, captivating audiences of all ages. The strength of these shows put ABC in first place among our target audience of young adults and makes it the number one network among upscale demographics that advertisers so greatly demand. This compelling content, combined with strong local news programming, has also made 8 of our 10 owned and operated television stations number one in their markets during the February sweep. High-quality programming also drives us onto new platforms, gives us an ability to expand internationally as well. Lost is currently seen in 193 territories worldwide. Desperate Housewives is in 203, Grey's Anatomy in 150, and I might add that all three shows are setting ratings records in many of these markets. Fans can now also buy ABC content on DVD, iTunes, and mobile phones, and this is just the beginning. The Apple iPod deal was a testament to the quality of our television shows, as well as our commitment to responding and adapting to consumer trends. We were first on this platform because we have the shows people want to watch, whether it's on TVs or laptops or on iPods. And the results have been extremely impressive, with nearly 4 million program purchases since this iPod launched just this past fall. At ABC, we're also extending our powerful franchises to reach audiences in new, more convenient ways while diversifying our revenue streams. SoapNet, now is in its 6th year, is a great success story that continues to deliver strong financial results and viewer satisfaction among its core audience of soap fans. With a combination of ABC's leading soaps, plus Days of Our Lives, SoapNet is now the single destination for the country's top-rated daytime dramas, reaching 48 million subscribers. And over the past 2 years, ABC Family's ratings have increased 68% among its target audience of young adults due to the strength of the network's original and acquired programming. Today, more people get ABC News on demand or demand news as it unfolds. With great shows like Good Morning America, 2020, and World News Tonight, ABC News has extended its award-winning news coverage with ABC News Now. This 24/7 subscription service is our news division's exceptional strategic push onto new technology platforms. It takes advantage of great programming, great journalistic integrity, and uses technology like broadband and new cable platforms to distribute this to consumers nationwide. Now, with more traffic, ad revenue, and commerce shifting to the Internet, we are aggressively developing rich media destinations that offer far more immersive and multidimensional experiences with Disney, ABC, and ESPN. And we believe our ability to aggregate content and experiences around these powerful brands will increase traffic and deepen our relationship with customers. Through these online destinations, consumers will watch our programming, shop for our products, participate in robust online communities, and much, much more, all based on their personal interests and our broad array of creative assets. The power of traditional television networks, with their ability to reach large audiences and create valuable content, will be complemented by these enhanced services that offer our consumers greater convenience, customization, and functionality. And now I'm going to give you an early look at what I'm talking about. In just a few months on ABC.com, you'll be able to watch your favorite episode of Lost, or maybe one you missed the night before. You can watch it on demand with the ability to freeze frame, or fast forward, or rewind. Or you can create an exclusive screening room for you and your friends to watch together as a community, even if it's from multiple locations. And we've created a flexible business model to best serve the preferences of our viewers. So you can choose between watching it for free on ABC.com with interactive advertising, or you can purchase episodes that are advertiser-free, thereby diversifying and expanding our revenue sources. Much like our strategy for ABC.com, the new Disney online destination will offer rich selections of engaging content and family-focused community features, as well as easy-to-use online shopping. I brought along a prototype of this to give you a sense of the direction we're going to take Disney.com. Now, while some of these features are available today, this enhanced Disney online destination will offer a consumer the ability to access our content in a faster, more convenient, and more compelling way. Users will be able to watch Disney Channel's hit movie, High School Musical, and every family member might want to enjoy our new immersive Pirates of the Caribbean multiplayer game. Customers will be able to tailor their online experience to their specific needs, whether they're vacation planning or shopping or just generally entertaining themselves with the next generation of digital entertainment and much, much more. Basically, it's going to give them the ability to share their interests with other great Disney fans and users. At ESPN, we cater to sports fans and their insatiable appetites for highlights, stats, scores, and sports news. I certainly know because I'm one of those people. Here's a wild statistic. 94 million Americans turn to ESPN every week. Now that you've seen that tape, that's no wonder. And there's no question that ESPN continues to set the worldwide standard in sports programming and continues to build on that reputation. As you just saw, ESPN has become much more than a single-screen experience. ESPN scored a major coup recently by acquiring NASCAR rights, in addition to the NFL, Major League Baseball, the NBA, and World Cup Soccer, and the longest-running primetime series in television history, Monday Night Football, will continue its 36-year legacy on ESPN this fall. As we expand ESPN.com to the multi-dimensional sports entertainment network of the future, you can expect that each time you encounter its environment, it will be personalized to reflect your interests and your favorite team. Our goal at ESPN.com is to make it the interactive center of the sports fans universe. So right now, the ESPN team is building features that will allow you to customize your own homepage and communicate with other fans who have the same interests as you do. The one thing sports fans definitely have in common is a passion for their favorite teams and their favorite players. And now ESPN has come up with a way to keep them connected wherever they go 24/7 on mobile ESPN. Now I'm sure most of you own a cell phone. Some of you may have personalized it with screensavers or maybe your favorite ringtones. But how many of you can actually get up-to-the-minute video highlights from live games on your cell phone? But by sheer coincidence, I have my ESPN phone with me right now. I'm going to do a quick demo. Now, I am a big New York Knicks fan, which has not been very easy this year. So instead, I thought we'd take a look at the Lakers. Since the screen that I'm holding is a little bit small, you'll be able to see it from your seats on the big screen behind me. Now, by clicking on your favorite team's icon, which I've got personalized on my ESPN phone, the Lakers at least today, you can follow all the action of the Lakers through ESPN's GameCast, or in my case, catch highlights of a game you may have missed. For instance, last Saturday, I missed the Lakers matchup with the Detroit Pistons. So by clicking on my Lakers icon here on my mobile ESPN, it brings me to that game. What you're now seeing is the final score of this game, with the Lakers on top, 105-94, which is a pretty big upset. You can also see that on the leaderboard, Kobe Bryant led the Lakers with 40 points. That's not that unusual this year. And since I missed the game, I would like to see a little bit of the action.
Lakers home to the Pistons, pick it up in the third, L.A. down 7. Smoot Parker showed off the house. Final pitch up, the third, Lamar Odom scored.
It's pretty cool, huh?
Now I'm going to be a bit of a huckster. Now, I know that the ESPN phone is not going to slice and dice your vegetables or help you catch largemouth bass or give you buns of steel, but it's available at a 10% discount out there in the tent as you leave the pond.
I also don't advise it if you're having trouble communicating with your spouse. Mobile ESPN is another great example of how we're serving our fans, expanding our businesses, and strengthening ESPN's position as the worldwide leader in sports entertainment. We're also creating something called Disney Mobile, which is specifically tailored to families. And we know parents are on the lookout for products that they trust, but we also know that kids like products that they find exciting and fun. So this new cellular business, which launches this summer, has features that we think are really fantastic for both parents and their children. We have great Disney content, a variety of other functions. We're going to officially give you all the details when we announce this next month. And when it comes to building outstanding Disney franchises, the Disney Channel Worldwide is a powerful creative engine. Now available in over 160 million subscribers in more than 100 countries. And the Disney Channel comprises one of the most successful portfolios of children's television anywhere and is a leading source of entertainment for kids and tweens. By virtue of its global reach and impressive audience loyalty, Disney Channel is a valuable daily ambassador for Disney worldwide. Hits like That's So Raven, The Suite Life with Zach and Cody and Kim Possible are connecting with children everywhere and creating tremendous opportunities for us well beyond the TV screen. Video games, DVDs, MP3 players, and a popular line of apparel make the show Raven one of the more successful franchise stories at Disney. In January, the Disney Channel debuted the original movie High School Musical, which became the highest-rated movie in the history of the channel. And before the movie premiered, the soundtrack was the number one soundtrack on iTunes and on Amazon.com. By the end of February, it was the number one album in the country, topping the Billboard 200 chart. And just last week, the soundtrack went platinum, and it's still a top seller. Take a look at High School Musical. For High School Musical, we created an absolute sensation, the success of which is being enjoyed across a number of our businesses. Between Disney Channel, Walt Disney Records, Radio Disney, and Disney.com, we were able to reach our core audience across all platforms, resulting in a phenomenon that is a true franchise for the company, and development has already begun on a sequel. At Playhouse Disney, our newest series, Little Einsteins, is popular among the preschool set, with its great entertainment and learning environment that kids respond to and parents trust. Little Einstein is a great example of how we're building on the success of the Baby Einstein franchise. When we purchased Baby Einstein 5 years ago, it generated just $25 million at retail. And today, we're at $200 million, and we continue to expand our offerings and global presence. The preschool market across the world is huge, with consumers spending north of $14 billion every year on character-based products. And the success of Little Einstein presents us with another opportunity for us to grow in this space. One of our most successful businesses continues to be the Disney Princess franchise, which ranges from dolls and DVDs to video games, a popular magazine, and the top-selling Princess TV at Target stores. In fiscal 2000, the franchise generated $3 billion in global retail sales, and we expect that number to continue to grow, especially if each of you joins us for the debut of the new Disney on Ice Princess show, which happens to open next week here at the pond. Another business in which we are extending our key company-wide franchises is in video games. Last quarter, we saw strong results with our new Narnia game, which shipped 2.5 million units worldwide. We're also launching a successful sequel to Kingdom Hearts in Japan. The first one sold 1 million copies in its first 3 days of release. We're very optimistic at the new one, which launches later next month. Look for more investment in this direction in what we see as a growing worldwide business of video games. Turning to parks and resorts, 50 years ago, Walt Disney redefined family entertainment when he created Disneyland, a kingdom where guests could experience the magic and wonder of his characters and see his stories firsthand. Today, Walt's realms of adventure, fantasy, and tomorrow span the globe and are indeed the source of special memories for over 1 billion people who have entered our gates over the last 50 years. And our parks, We're always investing in imagination, which is why our guests visit again and again, generation after generation. And today, in the midst of Disneyland's global 50th anniversary celebration, guests young and young at heart have visited our parks in record numbers to celebrate this milestone. In fact, this year, I'm pleased to report that we expect Disneyland to entertain more people than in any other year in its five-decade history. Now, with a little help from Tinkerbell and our Disney ambassadors, let's find out what's going on at our Disney destinations around the world. We're especially proud of our newest park, our first in China. Hong Kong Disneyland is a breathtaking achievement. It's also a unique addition to our parks and resorts destinations worldwide. Families from Hong Kong and mainland China and throughout Asia have visited the park and have been extremely positive, proving that Disney creativity really does cross borders and cultures. When the opening of Hong Kong Disneyland happened in September, we were very excited about prospects in that part of the world. We also knew that it would be an important cornerstone from which to build our company in the world's most populous nation. In addition to Hong Kong Disneyland, the Disney Studios will debut the Lion King stage play in Shanghai this July. Consumer Products has opened 2,600 Disney Corner merchandise locations across the mainland. They have plans to expand that by 60% by the end of this year. Disney characters and ringtones are now available on China Mobile. And we're working on our first Disney feature film co-production in China, which is called The Secret of the Magic Gourd. And 2 days ago, The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe opened in China to huge success. In fact, it was our biggest opening ever in China. A major focus at our studio is making great live-action Disney films like Narnia, National Treasure, and Eight Below. And we've got a lot to be excited about. We're working on a sequel to National Treasure. We're already in production for the first sequel to Narnia, which is called Prince Caspian, which is scheduled for a holiday 2007 release. And this Christmas, Tim Allen will be back in Santa Claus 3. Tim's actually been spending a lot of time in the studio this year, and his newest movie, The Shaggy Dog, opens in theaters starting today. The good news is we've got another Pirate sequel coming in 2007, plus we've got a great toy line, a new Disney online multiplayer game, and the enhancements that Pirates at Disneyland and Disney World, as you saw in the video earlier today. At Disney today, we have blockbuster live-action films, a top television network in ABC, the leading sports home for sports fans everywhere, and millions of people are visiting our parks. But to truly live up to our legacy, animation must be great. We must create animated films that raise the standard of the art and become true classics for countless generations. Walt Disney was fond of saying it all started with a mouse, or maybe a rabbit. But what he really meant was it all started with animation. For this company and for our shareholders, there's nothing like a great animated feature. It's our biggest wave maker, and its ripple effects can be profound. They can be felt across all of our businesses. Animation is not just our legacy. It is vital to this company and its future. When you look at Snow White or Lion King or Toy Story, they're not just movies. They're timeless stories with enduring characters in magical worlds, and they reach far beyond the movie theater. They become Broadway musicals, theme park attractions, and much more. In effect, they become part of our culture, and that's why they create so much value. Just consider a classic like Cinderella. She's as vibrant and as meaningful today as she was 55 years ago. When we released the DVD recently, we sold nearly 9 million copies. To go to Disney World, Breakfast with Cinderella is one of the most sought-after experiences. And at Halloween, thousands of little girls dress up and live their dream of becoming our princess. So there's no question, great animation is as timeless an art form as it is a business. To build upon the legacy of Walt Disney and to achieve the full potential of the company that bears his name, we have made animation our top priority. And we affirm that the art of Disney animation is incredibly important when we made a decision to acquire the Pixar Animation Studios. Now, we all know that this acquisition comes with award-winning, extraordinary stories and characters and great technology, but it also comes with considerable talent. The creativity and innovation of the Pixar team is outstanding, and leading this team are three of the most gifted and talented people in animation. Ed Catmull, who will be our new animation president, is renowned for his technical mastery and exceptional leadership. John Lasseter will be our Chief Creative Officer at Animation and Principal Creative Advisor at Imagineering. John's amazing ability to tell great stories and create unforgettable characters and believable worlds is evident in each one of the films he's made. And, as George Mitchell mentioned earlier, we all know that Steve Jobs is a true leader and visionary, and he will contribute his expertise as a board member after the deal closes. And here to tell you all about the exciting future and animation at Disney is a man who has a great love and passion for the art, but also a great love and passion for the Walt Disney Company. Ladies and gentlemen, John Lasseter.
For the Disney stockholders meeting, my wife said you got dressed up, John. So I wore black tennis shoes, and I put a jacket on. Look at it, baby. This is as dressed as I get. Anyway, I can't tell you how exciting it is to be here.
Not here at the pond, but be here at Disney. As you know, maybe you don't know, I was born in Whittier, California, about a half an hour from here. I went to, all I ever wanted to be was an animator. All I ever wanted to do was work for Walt Disney. I discovered that, you know when you're like really love cartoons, but you're in high school and you're supposed to be cool, and you would run home, this is before the Disney Channel, before video cassettes, you had to run home for 4:30, Bugs and His Buddies on KCTV Channel 11, to catch it, even in high school. That was me. And then when I was in high school, I read the book, The Art of Animation, by Bob Thomas, and it dawned on me, people make money doing cartoons? So that's what I want to be. So I went to CalArts. In fact, I got a scholarship to the Disney Foundation. And while I was there, I worked at Disneyland as ride operator in the Jungle Cruise. Absolutely. My favorite joke is, you know the natives that are on the pole and the rhino is there? You come up and go, oh, there they are. It's the famous Pontus tribe. They've been lost for a long time. Oh, look, the rhino's trying to Pocahontas. Number one joke. Anyway, I worked at Disney after I graduated CalArts in 1979, and then I saw something that I felt was amazing. The very first bit of 3D computer animation ever done. And I knew that Walt would have loved this. Walt always tried to get more dimension in his animation. I thought, this is amazing. So I followed my dream to work with what I think is one of the most amazing people I've ever known in my life, is Ed Catmull, of the Lucasfilm Computer Division. And in 1986, Steve Jobs bought us from Lucasfilm when we formed Pixar. And for the first 10 years, we lost a lot of Steve's money. A lot of Steve's money, but he believed in us. He believed in what we were doing. Pixar is its people. An amazing group of people that Ed and I, Steve, have been fortunate to lead for all these years. And all of us believe in one simple thing. Quality is a great business plan.
Period. We always believe that if, no matter what we did, made a feature film, a DVD, a lunchbox, a t-shirt, if we make the best quality it can be, where an animated film can entertain someone from the moment the lights in the theater to the moment they turn back on, from every minute, you're deeply entertained. That's why we do what we do. We believe in that. That's what I love to do. I love to entertain people thoroughly. And so when Bob Iger came to the three of us and said, we're interested in acquiring you, I was worried because we have built this incredibly wonderful culture at Pixar about creativity and about quality. And everyone there, 850 of us, believed in that single thing. And I was worried until I got to know Bob Iger. Ladies and gentlemen, you are led by a great man. He's amazing. And that's why we're here. That's why Pixar
joined up with Disney. And that's why Ed and I are so proud to lead Disney Feature Animation into the future. I promise you, we will make films that will entertain you from the moment the lights dim to the moment they come up. I give you my word on that. And you know what we found at Disney Feature Animation is the most amazing group of talented artists that have been wanting to make amazing motion pictures for a long time. And we're going to work with them, and it's going to be phenomenal. And I'm so excited. And we're bringing back some amazing people that have left, and we're making Disney the place you have to work at again.
Good. I get to help design theme park rides. I never understood why you wouldn't start designing a ride when you start coming up with an idea for an animated film. So when a film comes out, 2 months later, a ride can open. You know, it's just so it can take those, because we believe that you can make great stories with great characters that live beyond the boundary of those of the film, so that people want to be with those characters for the rest of their lives and experience it again and again and again. And so I promise you, not only are we going to make great motion pictures, we're going to make theme park rides that as soon as you get off that ride, you want to get back in that line no matter how long it is to ride that ride again. I promise you that. So I'm so excited. I get to direct movies, too. And my new movie, which I'm very proud of, is Cars. I've worked on this movie since December of 1999 when I finished directing Toy Story 2. My father was a parts manager at Chevrolet dealership in Whittier, California all my life, and I loved cars. And my mother was a high school art teacher at Bell Gardens High School and for 38 years. And so this is a very personal story for me because putting my two loves together. And so I brought to show you some special things. First, I would like to show you our latest teaser trailer is premiering here today for you. As I said, Cars is a very personal story for me. I worked nonstop directing Toy Story, A Bug's Life, Toy Story 2. And during that time, I actually had four of my five sons. And towards the end of Toy Story 2, my wife said, John, she was very supportive of me and my career in Pixar. But she said, one day you're going to wake up and your kids are going to have gone off to college and you will have missed it. I realized she was right. I took the summer off that year. We bought an old used motorhome. We put our feet in the Pacific Ocean. We turned and headed east. We had 2 months, just the family. And it was amazing. I changed. I came back. And I said, that's what I want that movie to be about. What I learned that summer. And so this story is a very special one to me. It's about a character named Lightning McQueen, voiced by Owen Wilson. This unbelievable rookie race car. In a world where there are no humans, just cars are alive. And in this world, cars are race cars are athletes. And he's driven to be the fastest, the quickest, to get there
and on his way to the final race of the season, through his self-sensitivity, he gets lost and stuck in an old Route 66 town that the interstate, the modern world, has bypassed long ago. And it's inhabited by nothing but old cars from the 50s and 60s. The one commodity they have a lot of is time. And he thinks he's stuck in hell, but he learns a lot about life. There he meets an old 51 Hudson Hornet called Doc Hudson. He's the town doctor and the town judge. They all have two jobs in the town. It's voiced by Paul Newman. And he falls in love with a Porsche 911, voiced by Bonnie Hunt. And he meets probably the most character he could never possibly be friends with. He only likes hanging out with new cars. There's a beat-up, rusty tow truck named Mater. As he says, his name is like Mater. Yeah, it's like the Mater without the tuh. And his voice by probably the greatest living American actor today, Larry the Cable Guy. I brought with me something special for just you. No one has seen this outside of Pixar. It's a clip from, it's not a trailer, it's a full clip from our movie. In this scene, Lightning McQueen has been, they don't know who he is. Here's this guy, comes through town, he wrecks their main road, their livelihood, and he's just sentenced. Doc Hudson sentences him to community service. You've got to fix what you broke before you can leave. So fixing a road to Lightning McQueen, the prima donna, he has to pull the disgusting, smelly, tar-covered rotating machine they lovingly call Bessie, and to fix the road. And he's working really, really hard. Mater, who's hanging out with him the whole time because it's a new person to talk to, is given the job to watch him so he doesn't escape one evening. And so instead of just watching him, Mater takes him to do his absolute favorite pastime. Thank you so much for having me here, and I'm so proud to be a part of this company again. Yeah, this guy's a great guy. Thank you, Bob.
Hey, John. Hold on one second. I think you're holding back. I think you got a little bit more.
Oh, that's right. I got one more thing.
How would you like to see what Pixar's doing next after Cars?
This is the world premiere of the trailer for our new movie. I'd just like to show it to you. Ratatouille is our eighth motion picture at Pixar. It will come out in the summer of 2007. It is being creatively being led by Brad Bird, the director of The Incredibles, from a story idea by Jan Pinkava, and it is, we're very, very excited about it. Trust me, you have never seen anything like this. So anyway, I'm so glad to be here. Thank you, Bob, for having me.
Thank you. Obvious from your reaction, you all joined in welcoming John and Ed Catmull, who's also with us today, as well as the entire Pixar team to the company. We're incredibly optimistic about what the future holds. When you think of Disney, the first thing that comes to mind is magic. Magic rooted in quality, creativity, with a vision that honors the past and embraces the great opportunity that the future holds. This is an exciting time for the Walt Disney Company, for me personally, and for our outstanding and talented management team and world-class cast. So I'd like to introduce our management team. Please hold your applause. George Bodenheimer, who runs ESPN and ABC Sports. The chairman of the Walt Disney Studios, Dick Cook. Walter Liss, who runs ABC-owned television stations. Andy Mooney, who leads consumer products. The head of our parks and resorts, Jay Rizzullo. Ann Sweeney, who's head of our Disney ABC media networks. Steve Wadsworth, managing our internet group. Andy Bird, head of Walt Disney International. Our chief counsel, Alan Braverman. Zenya Muka, who's head of corporate communications, Preston Patton, who leads our government relations effort, and our chief financial officer, Tom Staggs. Please all stand quickly. And before I finish, I'd like to recognize our outstanding team of Disney cast members and employees who bring it all together every day. I know there are a lot of them in the room. You can turn the lights up in the house. Everyone who's a Disney cast member, please stand up. How's that? These really are the men and women who really make it happen. They make magic happen at the company, and I thank all of them. We believe that a commitment to quality and creativity in its highest form, using technology to its fullest, closing international borders, and keeping consumers top of mind is the best way to manage and grow our businesses and deliver strong and consistent returns for you, our shareholders. So on behalf of the entire team, we appreciate and value the trust and confidence you have placed in us, and we are all very excited about the future holds and where our imaginations are going to take us. Thank you all very much. Thank you. And now I'd like to bring up Tom Staggs, who will report on your company's strong financial performance. Tom?
Thank you, Bob. Hello, and thanks to all of you for joining us today. Now, earlier this week in my son Tyler's kindergarten class, the kids were asked if they were given three wishes, what would they be? One of Tyler's wishes, in addition to never ever hearing the words, no more candy again, was to own Disneyland. When he told me that, I mentioned this to him that I was speaking today to Disney shareholders, the people who together actually do own Disneyland, to which he said, wow, that's cool. Couple might say hi. So, hello also from my son. The tough part about following the boss, and not to mention John Lasseter, is that they get to show all the great creative product. Fortunately, as a result of that wonderful creativity, we have a very strong financial story to share as well. But before I get too deep into that story, I'd like to set the stage a bit. As many of you realize, a company's success is based on a combination of factors. One factor is having an attractive market in which to operate. The good news is that the market for entertainment products and services is a great one that promises to grow on a global basis. A second critical factor for a company is having a competitive advantage in its market, such as proprietary process or technology or a strong brand name. Such an advantage is what allows a company to compete successfully and create value for its shareholders over time. Bob has just discussed the strength of our brands and entertainment franchises, our dedication to creative excellence, and our ability to extend our successes across our existing businesses and emerging opportunities. These are all fundamental sources of competitive advantage for your company. At Disney, brand strength, creativity, and innovation have always been the principal drivers of financial success and shareholder value, and we expect that to be the case going forward. A third factor for long-term success is having the financial strength and flexibility to effectively capitalize on marketplace opportunities and pursue new growth initiatives. And so I'm pleased to report that your company enjoys an extremely strong financial position as well. In assessing our financial performance, there are three principal measures that we track. As you'd expect, one of them is earnings growth. But there are two other critical building blocks in the creation of shareholder value, namely free cash flow and long-term return on invested capital. We performed well against all these metrics again this past year. In fiscal 2005, we delivered double-digit growth in our earnings per share, continuing the positive trends of the past several years. At the same time, we achieved near-record free cash flow and improved our return on invested capital for the third year in a row. Media Networks again stood out as the largest driver of our company's results last year, as consumers and distributors around the world continue to seek out Disney's high-quality, branded programming. In our cable group, ESPN and Disney Channel maintained top positions in their respective categories of sports and family entertainment, following significant profit growth for the year. These results are all the more gratifying because our team delivered this strong performance even as we continued to invest substantially in new programming and new businesses. On the broadcasting side, we're extremely pleased with ABC's resurgence. Fueled by the success of the hit shows Bob discussed earlier, ABC's financial results have improved dramatically. Our talented Touchstone television team produces most of our successful ABC shows, which means we will capture significant upside as we sell these programs into syndication and offer them on other platforms like DVD and iTunes. In fact, based on current ratings and marketplace trends, our slate of Touchstone produced shows should ultimately contribute over $1 billion in operating profit to the company. Of course, the place where we've invested capital most heavily over the past 10 years has been in our parks and resorts. This investment has enhanced Disney's leadership position and competitive advantage in this industry, and it's beginning to pay off in our financial results as well. Our growth in attendance, hotel occupancy, and guest spending at our parks and resorts in 2005 demonstrates that the appeal of these treasured entertainment assets is as strong as ever. This growth also resulted in solid gains in both revenue and operating profit for the segment. At the same time, our studio results for 2005 were less satisfying. Several factors impacted our performance here, including disappointing box office results for a number of films, weaker than expected sales for home video products, and a generally challenging theatrical and home video marketplace. Now, the film business by its nature is a hit-driven business. Our studio team is focusing their efforts and our investments in those areas where we believe we have the greatest potential for success, both creatively and financially. That means producing more of our films under the Walt Disney Pictures banner in order to capitalize on the advantages the Disney name gives us at the box office. Indeed, moviegoers have particular affinity for two film brands. One of them, of course, is Disney. The other is Pixar. At Consumer Products, we continue to deliver growth in merchandise licensing, buoyed by the success of characters like Mickey and Pooh, and also new product lines like Disney Princess. In 2005, these gains were offset by our increased investment at Buena Vista Games. Our video game spending will put pressure on near-term results, but this is an investment we are happy to make because we believe this business provides us with an excellent opportunity to further leverage our characters, stories, and creative strengths in an attractive and growing market. We're just one quarter into our 2006 fiscal year, but results thus far give us good reason for continued optimism. Earnings were up double digits, and we again delivered strong cash flow and improved returns on capital. Our performance in Q1 was driven by the growth in advertising sales and ratings across our media networks and by our theme parks, where we saw record holiday attendance, led by the tremendous success of the 50th anniversary celebration, especially right here at Disneyland. Bob highlighted the fact that we expect strong results to continue, but it bears repeating. Barring a downturn in the economic environment, we expect to deliver double-digit growth in earnings again in 2006. And we target double-digit average earnings growth through at least 2008. As you've probably noticed, we've also seen recent strength in Disney's stock price. So far in fiscal 2006, Disney's total return to shareholders is 18%, more than four times the return on the broader market during that same period. It's a good start to the year. Of course, one of our most important jobs, though, is to allocate capital and manage our asset base in order to position Disney for long-term success. Our recent efforts in this regard are evidenced by two major strategic initiatives. The first, of course, is our agreement to purchase Pixar. The combination of Pixar and animation represents a fundamental investment in Disney's creative vibrancy and future, as you just saw in great detail. We expect the transaction will actually dampen earnings per share for the next couple of years. However, we believe that the combination will add to our earnings after that, and it will extend our ability to develop properties that truly set Disney apart while adding value across virtually all of our businesses. Since the required period for the U.S. antitrust review has now expired, Pixar will be directly be in a position to send proxies to its shareholders in the next several weeks, which would enable us to complete the transaction by late April or May. The second recent initiative is the merger of our ABC radio assets with Citadel Broadcasting. In our radio business, we have an excellent set of assets and an outstanding management team. Debt and further strengthen our balance sheet. From our peak level at the beginning of 2002 to the end of this past year, we've reduced our net borrowings by over $6 billion. So our financial position today is excellent, and it allows us to invest for the future, even as we return value to our shareholders through dividends and share repurchase. In 2005, we increased the dividend by more than 12% to 27 cents per share, which means that our dividend is up by almost 30% in total over the last 2 years. We've also actively repurchased Disney shares. From August 2004 through December 2005, we devoted nearly $4 billion to repurchase Disney stock. We currently intend to repurchase in excess of $5 billion of Disney shares over the next 12 months. And our goal is to repurchase as many shares as we are issuing in the Pixar transaction by the end of 2007. We're pleased with the recent results, but at the same time, we are by no means complacent. And we're more focused than ever on building on the recent success in order to deliver further value for you. Our job as stewards of your company is to continue to provide and make good on Disney's fundamental promise to deliver creative excellence. In a world where we can reach consumers in more ways than ever with entertainment experiences and products, the possibilities for Disney creativity are greater than ever. By setting the bar high for creative quality and innovation, we will continue to make Disney the place to be for consumers around the world and our investors as well. So with that, I'd like to turn the floor back over to Senator Mitchell for the business portion of our meeting. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Tom. We will now turn to the formal business before the meeting. I'd like to invite Bob and Tom to rejoin me, along with Alan Braverman, Executive Vice President, General Counsel, and Secretary of the company. Today's meeting has been duly called and is being conducted in conformity with the laws of Delaware and the company's charter and bylaws. Notice of the meeting and proxy materials describing the meeting's business have been duly sent to the company's shareholders. The polls open at 8 a.m. this morning and will close at the end of the business portion of this meeting. If you haven't yet voted, or if you want to change your vote, you may do so at any time prior to the closing of the polls. Ballots for this purpose are available at the registration tables and inside the east entry of the building. Copies of the rules for the meeting have been made available at the same locations. I'd like to ask for everyone's cooperation in respecting the rules, including speaking time limits, and assisting us in the orderly conduct of business. The company has retained Mellon Investor Services, an independent voting tabulation service, to act as inspector of election for this meeting. We have four items on the agenda today: the election of 13 directors, ratification of the appointment of our registered public accountants, and two shareholder proposals. We will take these matters up in the order presented in the proxy statement. Once we've completed our consideration of these items, the polls will close, and we will hear a preliminary report from the Inspector of Election. The business portion of the meeting will then conclude. At the end of the business portion, we will proceed with a general question and answer period. We will then adjourn. I would now like to introduce our Inspector of Election, James Kirkland of Mellon Investor Services, and ask him to report on the number of outstanding shares present today and voting. Mr. Kirkland.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is James Kirkland of Mellon Investor Services. I've been here today as the Inspector of Election for this meeting. As of the close of business on January the 9th, 2006, the record date for this meeting, there were 1,922,306,909 shares of common stock outstanding, each of which is entitled to one vote. There are at least 1,643,642,330 shares of common stock represented by proxy at this meeting, representing at least 85% of the total number of shares entitled to vote.
Based on the report, thank you. Based on the report we've just heard, I rule that a quorum is present and that this meeting is qualified to proceed with the business before us. The first proposal that we will take up is the election of 13 members of the Board of Directors. Those nominated for election at this meeting, all of whom are currently serving on the board, are John Bryson, John Chen, Judith Estrin, Robert Iger, Fred Langhammer, Colvin Lewis, Monica Lozano, Robert Matchelot, George Mitchell, Leo O'Donovan, John Pepper, Orrin Smith, and Gary Wilson. As you know, the board has recommended a vote for the election of all of the nominees. Before I ask if there is any discussion on this item, let me remind you that we will have a general question and answer period immediately following the business portion of the meeting. So for now, please keep any comments you may have to the election of directors. With that, does anyone wish to speak on this item, the election of directors? Hearing? I'm sorry, I can't see. Is there anyone who wishes to speak? Yes? Which station is the person at? Right here? All right. I don't think you can be heard, sir. Can you get to a microphone?
So, my name is Patrick Daugherty, and I'm with the New York City Comptroller's Office, the custodian for the New York City Pension Funds. I'd like to state that New York City Pension Funds are supporting all of the nominees presented for election today. I would also like to take this opportunity, on behalf of the City of New York, to commend Senator George Mitchell for his many services to our company, to our country, and to the cause of peace in the world. Thank you, Senator Mitchell.
Okay. It was a little out of order, but considering the comment, I'll accept it. Is there anyone else who wishes to be heard on this subject? If not, then thank you, and we'll now proceed to the next item of business, which is ratification of the appointment of PricewaterhouseCoopers, LLP, as the company's independent registered accountants for the current fiscal year, as recommended by the Audit Committee of the Board of Directors. Services provided by PricewaterhouseCoopers to the company include examination of the company's financial statements and review of its reports and other filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Representatives of PricewaterhouseCoopers are here today to respond to any questions. The board has recommended a vote for the ratification of the appointment of PricewaterhouseCoopers as the company's independent registered accountants for fiscal 2005. Is there any discussion on this matter? Hearing none, I thank you, and we'll now proceed to consideration of the two shareholder proposals. The first is a proposal submitted by Mrs. Evelyn Davis. Mrs. Davis could not be with us today, So we have agreed that we would deem her proposal presented, even though she could not be here personally to present. Her proposal asks that the Board of Directors take steps to prevent the payment of green mail. Mrs. Davis presented a substantially similar proposal last year, which received a 56% favorable vote. The Board of Directors agreed with the goal of preventing payments of green mail. And in response to last year's proposal, the board amended the company's bylaws to prohibit the purchase of shares at a premium to market price from any owner of more than 2% of the company's shares, unless an offer is made to all shareholders on the same terms. Mrs. Davis's proposal differs from the solution we adopted because it would apply to any purchase of more than 10,000 shares rather than to purchases of more than 2% of the company's shares. We believe the 2% threshold we've adopted is more appropriate, and it is, in fact, lower than the threshold used by most companies. We believe that Mrs. Davis's proposal would, on the other hand, significantly limit the company's flexibility to take action that may well be in the best interest of all shareholders. The Board of Directors has therefore recommended a vote against Mrs. Davis's proposal. Is there any further discussion on this issue? Hearing none, we will now move on to the final item on our agenda, which is a proposal from the New York City Retirement Systems relating to labor standards in China. I understand that a representative of the proponent is here to present the resolution, and I would like to invite them to do so. I ask that they limit the presentation to no more than 5 minutes. Is the representative of the proponent present to make that presentation? Is that Mr. Daugherty, you going to make this as well?
Yes, Mr. Right. Chairman, fellow shareholders, my name is Patrick Daugherty, and I'm here today on behalf of the New York City Pension Funds to present our fund's resolution on the implementation of Disney's human rights labor standards in China. Over the last 10 years, reports of human rights abuses in the overseas operations of some U.S.-based corporations have led to an increased public awareness of the problems of child labor, sweatshop conditions, and the denial of labor rights in U.S. corporate overseas operations. Human rights violations in these operations have, in many cases, engendered negative publicity, public protests, and loss of consumer confidence, all of which can have a negative effect on shareholder value. Several Hong Kong-based human rights organizations have surveyed a number of Disney suppliers in South China in 2001, 2002, 2004, and most recently in 2005. They found numerous violations of Disney's corporate code of conduct, as well as violations of Chinese labor law. They also reported on supplier management efforts to frustrate and deceive Disney's own auditors through the use of poached worker interviews, false records, and doctored books. Disney's stated commitment to respect human rights in its overseas operations is a welcome first step. However, experience has shown that codes of conduct which are not adequately enforced have resulted in little or no substantive change on the ground. We therefore welcome the pilot project in 10 factories in China that Disney has entered into in cooperation with the McDonald's Corporation in an attempt to develop a new, truly effective system for ensuring that basic human rights standards are adhered to in the company's operations in that country. If this project is successful, we would ask Disney's management to commit to extending this new monitoring model to all of its operations in China and to study its applicability to Disney suppliers elsewhere in the world. In light of the serious questions which have arisen and continue to arise concerning the company's operations in China, the New York City Pension Systems have asked that the Board of Directors conduct a comprehensive review of the adherence of Disney's Chinese suppliers to its code of conduct, applicable local laws, and the core conventions of the International Labor Organization, and to report back to shareholders on their findings and conclusions. I therefore on behalf of the New York City Pension System, holder of 7,628,000 shares of the Walt Disney Company, submit proposal number 4 found in your proxy materials. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Daugherty. We appreciate and take seriously your comments. This is the third time this particular proposal has been made. We have an active international labor standards program, which is now in its 10th year. As indicated in the proxy materials, this program combines a strict code of conduct applicable to all manufacturers of Disney-branded merchandise with an ongoing program of education, consultation, and assistance in remediation whenever violations of our standards are found. We know that having a strict code of conduct is not enough. To be effective, compliance with the code must be actively and thoughtfully monitored. We also believe from our years of experience that increasing collaboration with others involved in this area is important for continued progress. Among other current efforts, we've been working closely with McDonald's Corporation, with a group of faith-based and socially responsible institutional investors, and with local civil society organizations in China on a project aimed at promoting sustained compliance with labor standards codes of conduct. Last year, this project, known as Project Kaleidoscope, issued an interim report describing the program and its objectives. That report is available on our company's website. The project itself is expected to be completed in the near future, with a final report that will also be made available on our corporate website. In addition to Project Kaleidoscope, we are presently working with other civil society organizations in China to develop and strengthen resources to support continued improvements in working conditions. One particular effort of note is a pilot being conducted with local civil society organizations that provides a confidential helpline accessible by workers. We hope that success with this pilot will encourage other companies operating in the region of China covered by the helpline to support and implement this important resource in their own labor standards program. It is against this background that the board has decided not to support this proposal, although we respect the intention of the proponents. We believe the report we are developing through Project Kaleidoscope and our other ongoing activities in China and elsewhere around the world offer a more promising effort, a promising direction for our efforts. We have thus recommended a vote against this resolution. Is there any further discussion of this item? Yes. I think that's... Is that station number 1? Yes. Why don't you proceed?
Hello. My name is Erica Lurch, and I have 2,000 shares, and several years ago I did speak to this question also. I come from a very socially responsible family, and I have seen the long-term investment benefits, and I'm very pleased with the amount of work that you're putting into this, and I would like to repeat my suggestion. Let's buy or build our own factory in China, and then we can control the labor standards of our own workers. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Your comment. Is there any further comment on this issue? If not, this concludes consideration of all of the items to be presented at this meeting. The polls will now close, and I would ask the Inspector of Elections to give us his report based on proxies received by the opening of the polls at today's meeting. Ballots and proxies handed in during the meeting will be tabulated by the Inspector and included in the final tally, which will be reflected in the minutes of the meeting and in our next quarterly report. Inspector, may we have your preliminary report?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For item 1, the election of directors, we have received proxies or votes for a total of at least 1,547,910,731 shares for each director. Four votes represent in excess of 94% of the votes cast for each director. For item two, ratification of the appointment of PricewaterhouseCoopers, LLP, we have received proxies or votes for a total of 1,595,649,613 shares on this proposal. Votes in favor of the proposal represent approximately 97% of the votes represented at the meeting and entitled to vote on this proposal. For item three, a shareholder proposal concerning the payment of green mail, we have received proxy or votes for a total of 266,248,435 shares on this proposal. Votes in favor of this proposal represented approximately 20% of the votes represented at the meeting and entitled to vote on this proposal. For item four, a shareholder proposal with respect to the labor practices in China, we have received proxies or votes for a total of 107,587,954 shares on this proposal. Votes in favor of the proposal represented approximately 8% of the votes represented at the meeting and entitled to vote on this proposal. That concludes my report, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Based on that report, I declare that all of the nominees for election to the board have been duly elected, that the appointment of PricewaterhouseCoopers has been duly ratified, and that each of the shareholder proposals has not been adopted, in each case subject to the final confirmation of voting results by the Inspector of Elections. That concludes the business portion of the meeting. At this point, we will open up the floor to your questions. If you'd like to ask a question, please proceed to one of the microphones and wait to be recognized. When you're recognized, please state your name, tell us where you're from, indicate whether you're a shareholder or are representing a shareholder, and then proceed with your question. To give other shareholders an opportunity to be heard, I ask that you limit yourself to one question of no more than 2 minutes, and I ask Bob, Tom, and Alan to keep their answers brief and responsive. I also ask that speakers refrain from raising personal matters or grievances, since it's really not fair to make everybody sit through matters of personal concern. I see we have several lights flashing, so I'll start right here with number three.
Hi, my name is Craig Bonkin. I'm from Riverside, California, and I'm a shareholder. Mr. Iger, congratulations on the Pixar merger. I think it shows a return to emphasis on creativity, and I have a question. Do you feel that middle management at the Walt Disney Company has gotten too large, shoving out the focus on creativity, and do you plan to work to shrink middle management and return the emphasis to the creative managers?
I said in my remarks earlier, creativity is vital to the future of the company, and maintaining an environment of a company that is healthy from a creative perspective is also a top priority. We'll continue to look at the structure of the company and the number of people we have and continue to assess whether it makes sense or not for the company and for its shareholders. But to answer your question specifically, I don't really have a strong sense that middle management is a problem at the company today and is getting in the way of the creative process.
Thank you. Station number five.
Yes, my name is Nick Frudakis. I'm from Newport Beach. I'm a shareholder. And going over the Pixar animation, I realized that you have a person that's devoted his whole life to the Walt Disney concept, I also realize that now we have talking cars and not human beings. What I'd like to ask for is, could Disney look into a Hall of Fame for past employees that have devoted their whole life from high school to retirement and give them honors based on the years spent? I think they deserve it, and I'd like to know who the people are that have worked for Disney that put in their complete life. And I'm only a newcomer. I think I've been a shareholder for 25 years, but Walt Disney, Roy Disney, I remember Ron Miller, who I believe Eisner helped throw out. Another famous person that I believe devoted his life was Dick Nunes, and I think several others. And I think you should have a Hall of Fame. And as far as Eisner, you know, his little 10-year fly-by-night take out $1 billion, I'd leave him out of the Hall of Fame. Thank you.
Well, we do have a program at Disney. We call it Disney Legends. And we have, how many Disney Legends there are today. I'm sure there are people in the audience who would know the exact number. But we've paid tribute and paid tribute on an annual basis to people we have deemed worthy and people who have essentially contributed. They are able talents over a long period of time to the Walt Disney Company. It's something that I really believe in. I think it creates great value. It serves as, I think, an incentive of sorts for many others to follow suit. We also have two ceremonies annually, one in Anaheim, actually three, one in Los Angeles and one in New York. We call it the Service Awards that honor Disney employees for 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, and beyond years of service, and that's an excellent way to pay tribute and to recognize employees and cast members who have devoted their time and energy and talents to the company over a long period of time.
Thank you. Station number two.
Okay. My name is Kathy Gregory. I'm from Los Angeles, and I'm a stockholder. And I am of the generation of baby boomers. I'm finding on the Disney Channel and on a lot of your entertainment areas, you're kind of forgetting us. When the Disney Channel started, we had a Walt Disney. We saw the programs from the 50s and 60s that we grew up with. Yeah. Is there any chance in any of your mediums, like television, Disney Channel, or maybe a new cable station, that you might bring back the Wonderful World of Disney, Mickey Mouse Club, Zorro, and the like?
Well, I can relate. I'm a baby boomer, too. I mean, grown up loving Spin and Marty, for instance. But that's a good example, because we did try programming on the Disney Channel a while back called Walt Disney, which you cited. A lot of the programs, those programs were on late at night, and we really didn't get ratings that were particularly significant. So what we decided to do was to make all that great older product available through home video, DVD and VHS. And in fact, we put out a Spin and Marty collection just this past Christmas, and I had a great time watching it with my 7-year-old son. So in that, on the Disney Channel or other channels, right now we don't have plans to put them on, but you can go out and get them through home video. It's possible when you think about the Disney of the future, which I gave you a look into in my presentation, that sites like Disney.com will be a perfect place to offer those kind of programs, things that we cherish because we grew up with them and have great memories of them, and I will look into that possibility. Thank you.
Station number nine.
My name is Alan Blank. I live in Aliso Viejo. I am a stockholder. I'm also a 2-time cast member of Disneyland. And back in 1970 when I worked there, the term rides you got reprimanded for. I would like to see a possible board look at consideration that maybe rides be a word that's no longer used associated with Disney attractions and call them attractions and exhibits again, and let rides be banned from the use of the theme parks. Disneyland is not like Magic Mountain, not Story Farm. Other places do use the word rides. Disneyland and Walt Disney decided to make this something special. And I think by using rides, we
put ourselves, that they can compare us to us, and we should not be compared to anybody.
Thank you very much. Respect your comments. I actually thought we referred to them more as attractions than rides, but point well taken. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Station number 4.
Thank you. My name is Anthony Abrano. I'm from West Hills, and I am representing a shareholder. My question concerns the next generation video formats, and with the next generation gaming consoles picking each side in the Blu-ray HDVD war right now, I'd like to find out which side Disney has sided with.
We're very excited about next-generation DVD format because we think it'll offer people who watch home video a chance to enjoy the experience at a much higher level, and we will be aggressive at putting out titles on next-generation DVD, which will primarily be high definition. For the most part, we have been supporting the Blu-ray format because we think it offers more features and higher quality than the competing format, although we probably will publish in both formats, but our support is largely for Blu-ray, and we're optimistic that that is the format that is going to prevail. There'll be a number of titles made available in Blu-ray later on in calendar 06.
Station number 1.
My name is Maurice Lodger. I'm a stockholder. I own 17,000 shares. My question is, why some of the directors don't own any shares? I mean, they didn't buy any shares. I believe that some of the directors that represent me, they should buy some shares in the company.
The board has adopted guidelines which require a minimum shareholding level by all directors. There is a period of time within which they can do that, and all of the directors are currently in compliance with that. We have two new directors who just joined the board, and they will, of course, have a period of time within which to meet the requirement.
And the details of that are in the proxy that we mailed fairly recently.
Yes. Thank you. Station number 8.
Hi, my name is Steve Merkin. I'm from North Hollywood. Not only am I a stockholder, but I'm also a annual pass holder. Robert, I had the pleasure of meeting you on the 50th anniversary of Disneyland. You were in Adventureland with Michael Eisner, and you took a moment to shake my hand, and I wish you the best of luck, and I do again right now. It was a wonderful day, and Disneyland's a great place to go to, but my only concern is that after the 50th anniversary is done at Disneyland, and you go back to being just what Disneyland was before, which is a great place to go to, what do you have planned to reinvigorate people coming to Disneyland so that they will say, well, the 50th anniversary is over with, there's no more big deal. Yeah, I'll go someplace else.
Well, we have a lot of plans. It would take me a long time to take you through them. We showed a few of the plans in the tapes that we ran earlier, including the fact that we're bringing the sub-attraction back with the Nemo theme, which I'm extremely excited about. We spend time on the subject that you raised all the time. There's all kinds of development going on for Disneyland and for California Adventure. A lot of new attractions in development, a lot of new marketing plans, all kinds of things that we think are going to create real interest in Disneyland for years to come. The list is simply too long. Your point is well taken, but I assure you, your company, Parson Resorts, at Disneyland specifically, and at Walt Disney Imagineering, is working hard to accomplish exactly what you would like us to accomplish.
Yep. We'll go back to station number 3.
Hello, Mr. Iger and board members. My name is Orlando Rios, and I'm from Rosemead, and I'm a shared stockholder. Maybe perhaps you or anybody else can answer this question. Over at the park, I've discussed with some of the cast members about continuation of Tim Burton's Nightmare Before Christmas at Disneyland. People traverse 4,000 miles across the Pacific Ocean and come in from all parts of the country to come to this event and purchase merchandise there. I was wondering if, and the situation is, and from what I've heard, is that the contract with Tim Burton is on the block, and it's a deciding factor whether they're going to keep it or not. I was wondering if you plan to create a new contract or continue anything involving Mr. Burton or his works.
We call this Stump the CEO. I knew there would be one or two questions that I'd be asked that I could not answer. I know that the attraction is certainly one that has done extremely well for us and has given people great experiences over the year. I don't know what the status of our discussions are with Tim Burton. I'm looking at a few people and they're shaking their heads. We will, if you leave us with your name, we'll get back to you, honestly, unless we want to turn the mic over to Matt Wienman, who's sitting here somewhere. Matt, well, this is called Stump the President of Disneyland, too, maybe. Are you stumped, too? Yes, he's shaking his head. We're okay? I think we're okay with Tim Burton, right?
We are great with Tim Burton.
Okay, that's my thought. I don't think you have to worry.
Station number 5.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Craig B. Smith. I'm a cast member and a shareholder, and the way I got my shares was getting my 20% taken out every week over 5 years. Got 1,000 shares now over that, so I believe in the company a lot, but to be honest with you, I don't think you're doing right by your cast members in Anaheim. The cost of living is extremely high here, and the company has come to us saying we want you to go from CR25 to 30 to be your benefits. We're open to that, but the company isn't willing to give us more money. And considering the cost of living here, do you really think it's right not to give us a decent, substantial raise in exchange for less benefits?
Well, thank you. First of all, I respect your point of view on that. I'm well aware that there are negotiations underway representing a number of cast members at Disneyland, some 4,000. We've actually concluded negotiations with a number of unions representing roughly 50,000 cast members, and they've already ratified or accepted terms that are similar to the terms that we have on the table with the group that represents you. This is a pretty challenging time in corporate America, mostly because of the significant increase in health care, and that has cost companies and their employees significant amounts of money. We're trying to balance the desire to motivate our cast to retain and attract great talent, but also to deliver value to our shareholders over the long run. So the terms that are on the table, and I won't get into all the details, the terms that I said are consistent with what we've offered others and they have accepted, and in line with the balance that we're trying to strike between shareholder interests as well as the interests of our company and our cast members.
Good. Thank you, Bob. Station number 2.
Yes, hello. My name is Joan Lauby. I live in Cypress, California, and I am a representative for my children who are shareholders. Thank you, Mr. Iger, for bringing in Mr. Roy Disney and Pixar. We think you're doing a wonderful job. The question that I have is that I saw Rapunzel will be made in the near future, and I was wondering if it was going to be a 3D animation or if it's going to be hand-drawn, because Disney has a wonderful wonderful way of doing the classics with hand-drawn.
We are making a movie called Rapunzel Unbraided. It's being directed by an extremely talented artist named Glenn Keane, who's been with the company for a long time and worked with John Lasseter when John worked at Disney Animation a few decades ago. Rapunzel uses an incredibly new technology that Glenn actually helped develop, which gives him an ability to actually draw with a human hand and convert it to computer images on the screen. So we're very excited about it. when you see it, it creates a look and an experience that is very, very rich and compelling and unlike any that you've seen before. We also believe that in the end, while technology is really valuable and gives us the ability to create new experiences and to do amazing things for our audiences, as you saw in John's presentation for Cars and Ratatouille, in the end, it's not about really technology. It's about great stories and characters and, as John likes to say, believable worlds. So if we find that we have great characters and stories and believable worlds and that that can be depicted in 2D animation, that's also fine with us. It's an art form that is eternal in many respects and shouldn't be ignored.
Station number 6.
Hello, my name is Pamela Dickerson, and I'm a shareholder. I live in Anaheim, and I own a small business here in Anaheim. For years, we've heard about a third gate being planned for Anaheim, and I recently heard rumors that those plans have been abandoned for now. Could you speak to that rather ugly story, please?
We're actually not developing a third gate for Anaheim. We're still working to make sure that our second gate is successful. It will be. It will be. But no, we don't have plans right now. We have extra property here, and at some point we might use it for some good purpose for the company, but we're not developing a third gate. There's still a lot more to do at California Adventure and at Disneyland.
Station number 9.
My name is Richard Murphy. I'm from Whittier. I'm a shareholder and former employee. Over the years at these meetings and in the materials, they talk about the priority of growing internationally. Is there a metric you can offer to describe the progress that's being made to grow international versus domestically?
Well, we've been, over decades, a company that's done a fair amount of business internationally. In fact, Disney is known around the world as well. What we're trying to do is to deepen our penetration into some of the both mature markets like Western Europe, but also some of the developing markets like China and India. And I can't give you a specific metric. We've discussed multiple targets at the company among the board and senior management. I'm encouraged by some of the things we're putting in place. I also believe that this is something that is going to require patience, particularly in the emerging world. You have to invest today for growth tomorrow, and we're doing just that. I mentioned some of the examples in my presentation. Growing internationally has its rewards. It can also be kind of frustrating, and I have to tell you that we have to balance both these days. There's a lot we'd like to do, in some cases that we can't, either because of local infrastructure issues or local regulation, but it is a strategic priority, as I mentioned, and we're working hard at it, and we have some very talented cast members led by Andy Bird, our head of international, that's devising plans and trying to implement them across the company, across the world.
Station number 4.
My name is Howard Cromer. I live in Cyprus. I'm a Disney shareholder. I'm actually delivering a message for my son, Ken. He wants to know, in recent years, in the midst of all your re-releases of your videos, why you haven't released Song of the South, one of your Disney classics. And he wonders why. Frank Wells told me many years ago that it would be coming out. Well, obviously, Frank Wells isn't around anymore, but we still wonder why. And by the way, Mr. Iger, he thinks it was a very good choice when they made you CEO of Disney.
Thank you very much. You may change your mind when I answer your question, though. We've discussed this a lot. We believe there's actually an opportunity from a financial perspective to put Song of the South out. I screened it fairly recently because I hadn't seen it since I was a child. And I have to tell you, after I watched it, even considering the context that it was made, I had some concerns about it because of what it depicted, and thought that it's quite possible that people wouldn't consider it in the context that it was made. And there were some depictions that I mentioned earlier in the film that I think would be bothersome to a lot of people. And so owing to the sensitivity that exists in our culture, balancing it with a desire to maybe increase our earnings a bit, but never putting that in front of what we thought were our ethics and our integrity, we made the decision not to re-release it. It's not a decision that's made forever. I imagine this is going to continue to come up, but for now, we simply don't have plans to bring it back because of the sensitivities that I mentioned. Sorry.
Station number 1.
Hi, my name is Jason, and I'm from Anaheim, California. I've been with the company for about 10 years, and I'm a shareholder. I definitely applaud all of the creative aspects this company is returning to, putting John Lasseter in charge of Imagineering and putting him in charge of a lot of the animation aspects. However, my question concerns the issue of compensation and benefits at the Disney parks worldwide. And with the emphasis on and focus returning to attracting talented individuals to the company, specifically the resorts worldwide, what is being done to ensure the receipt of competitive compensation and benefits in order to attract the type of talent that the resorts are known for?
Well, I tried to address a similar issue in the earlier question. I did not mention the fact that the benefits packages that were offers that we have on the table, we believe, are competitive. In fact, the specific example that was used about needing to work 30 hours a week to qualify for certain benefits is actually generous compared with what a lot of other companies require, which is a 40-hour week work before you're eligible for benefits. In that specific instance, we're actually increasing the requirement, I realize, which has caused a bit of tension, from 25 hours to 30. But again, we feel that the 30 hours is more than competitive. We don't believe that there's anything that we have on the table that actually reduces our ability to attract and retain people or to motivate them. And as I said earlier, what we have on the table with the union members that are being represented is not different, by and large, than what other unions and other cast members have already accepted across that business segment, including Walt Disney World and Disneyland.
Station number 8.
Hi, my name is Michael Passoff. I'm with the As You Sow Foundation in San Francisco. I'm here representing a coalition of faith-based and socially responsible investors concerned about smoking in movies. Before I ask my question, I'd like to thank Disney Management for its open dialogue with shareholders on this issue. In 2004, management responded to our request by putting a statement on its website regarding the depiction of smoking in movies. In 2005, Disney conducted a survey of smoking in its movies. It is a great first step, but they're only first steps. In 2005, the first year one might have expected to observe effects of the company's 2004 policy on tobacco and film, tobacco incidents for G and PG live-action releases were 83% higher than the company's 1999 to 2004 average. Incidents for GG-13 releases were down just 2% from the 99 to 2004 average. Tobacco incidents for R-rated release jumped 13%. More importantly, there have been major scientific and legal developments regarding this issue in just the last few months. A nationwide study funded by the National Cancer Institute confirms that exposure to tobacco on screen is a major recruiter of new young smokers. The Attorney General of 32 states asked Disney and other major movie studios to place anti-smoking announcements on DVDs and videos that portray smoking. A full-page ad in the New York Times highlighting the role played by movie studios in recruiting new smokers and calling for an R rating for movies with smoking was signed by the National PTA, American Heart Association, American Lung Association, and American Medical Association. Pediatrics, the peer-reviewed publication of the American Academy of Pediatrics, examined the findings of 42 studies and concluded there's more smoking in movies now than in the 1950s. More in youth-rated G, PG, PG-13 films than adult-rated films, that viewing on-screen smoking increases adolescent smoking initiation, and that policy changes, including R rating, would prevent more than 60,000 tobacco deaths a year in future decades. The bottom line is movies are one of the largest recruiters of teen smokers in America. 4,000 teens will try their first cigarette today. Tobacco is the number one cause of preventable death, killing 440,000 Americans every year. Disney hotels and amusement parks went smoke-free on March 1st. Disney gives free trips to school kids who participate in anti-smoking campaigns. When it comes to its films, Disney can do much more than just wish upon a star. It can accept responsibility for the content of its motion pictures. My question, will Disney agree to the Attorney General's request and place anti-smoking ads on DVDs and videos that portray smoking? And will Disney, whose policy of discouraging smoking has had little, if any, impact, will adopt a simple, verifiable standard, no tobacco on youth-rated movies under the Disney label?
Let me begin by saying I hate smoking in movies. I have children,
and anything that can be done to discourage them or not to encourage them, I would certainly support. We have taken great steps to eliminate smoking from movies that bear the Disney name, and by and large have been thoroughly effective in that regard. Every once in a while, it occurs, primarily in movies that we call period pieces or that depict times. For instance, The Greatest Game, which is a movie about golf at the turn of the century, was one. There are times when we try to depict those times in a more accurate fashion, when people, by and large, smoke more often, that we allow it. But it's very, very rare. And you're going to continue to see a very strict standard applied to movies that bear the Disney name. On non-Disney branded movies, Touchdown movies, Miramax, etc., there will be times that they're smoking. It won't be all that often, as far as I know, and we're working hard at really discouraging movie makers that work for us to eliminate smoking from their films. I'm not fully familiar with the Attorney General's proposal, but to my knowledge, we do not have plans right now to run anti-smoking spots on our movies and in our videos. I'd be glad to discuss that with Dick Cook, who runs the studio, but I'm not aware that we have specific plans at this point.
Station number 3.
My name is Michael Peterson, and I'm a shareholder from Mission Viejo. I just want to say thank you for holding the meeting here in Anaheim. It's the first one I've actually been able to attend. And I just wanted to ask a simple question of why are cameras not allowed? This is one of the few chances I would have to take some snapshots of our board of directors and Mr. Disney. Just kind of curious about that.
Well, we primarily didn't want cameras to take pictures of some of the footage that we showed you because we want to protect it, actually. This is a world where protecting intellectual property is pretty challenging, and oftentimes pictures that are taken end up disseminated pretty widely these days thanks to new technology. So when John Lasseter gets on stage and shows you that great clip from Cars, which has never been shown in public before, we have to really work hard to protect it because it's protecting the value of what we think is going to be an extremely valuable property for the company long term. That's the primary reason.
Station number 1.
Hi, my name is Deborah Kwan from Monrovia, California, and I'm a shareholder. You referenced earlier Anaheim's second gate. I know that attendance figures there have never been up to the projected level. Can you share with us some of your plans to bring it up to an A-list destination rather than Disneyland's little sister?
In the spirit of candor, we have been challenged, although I happen to think it's a great park and a great experience. There are some attractions at California Adventure that rival the best attractions we've ever built, including Soarin' Over California, which I love. It's a testament to incredible talent from Walt Disney Imagineering. There are numerous plans in place. John Lasseter and I have actually talked about some ideas that he has. I'm not going to give you specifics at this point because some of them are still a work in progress, but I can only say that it is a priority for the company. We think long-term great value is going to be derived from California Adventure, and we're working hard to see to it that we fulfill that promise.
Station number 5.
Hello, I'm Angela R. Manriquez from La Mirada, California, a shareholder. I wanted to know if Disney has any plans of spinning off any part of the company.
Well, we always take a look at our asset base with an eye toward delivering long-term shareholder value and growth. We recently made a decision, as Tom Staggs mentioned in his presentation, to divest our radio assets because we felt that they weren't necessarily core in nature and they'd be better off being part of a larger radio group, and so the combination with Citadel was designed to do just that. Again, we'll continue to look at all of our assets. We don't have specific plans at this point, but it is something that's an ongoing process. Just as it's an ongoing process to look at assets that we don't own to strengthen the company long term, as we did in our acquisition with Pixar.
Station number 2.
Hi, my name is Janet Hall. I've been a shareholder since 1981 when I first worked at Disneyland.
and I'm interested in now being a writer for Disneyland. Does Disney accept unsolicited material?
Rarely.
That's what I thought.
And the reason for that is, and I get pitched all the time from people who cut my hair to even my dentist has got an idea.
I didn't mean to be disrespectful to my dentist. He's done a good job, actually.
One of the reasons why we don't accept unsolicited pitches is that we have to be really careful protecting people's rights. And oftentimes, pitches that come in unsolicited can be similar to actual work or development that's going on at the company and create legal risk for the company when that happens. And so we're very, very careful that when pitches come in, they're brought in by representatives in the business, people that we're familiar with or people that have done this before, and they're very carefully tracked and managed under the watchful eye of our legal team. So it's difficult, unless you're well represented, to just bring in an idea from the outside.
Station number six.
Hi, my name is Ken Burke. I'm from Anaheim. I'm a shareholder, annual pass holder, and my wife is a former cast member. I believe it was Mr. Iger who said that Disneyland is looking better than ever. However, at night, it's much darker than it used to be. There used to be light, twinkle lights in all the trees. And now, especially around the Matterhorn, it's very dark. My wife uses an electric scooter to get around, and it's very hard to see cuts in the concrete, and she's almost gone over curbs a couple times. Is there something that can be done to increase the lighting there? Also, I question why we need to have factories in China at all. Anything that has Disney characters on it has to be licensed by Disney. Why can't that stuff be made in America? Thank you. Because the prices of souvenirs seem to have no relationship to the cost of the souvenirs. For instance, at Disneyland for $25 you can get a T-shirt, but I believe it could be made in America and still have a large profit margin and provide jobs in America. And my last point is I'd like to thank Senator Mitchell for his appearance at the 2004 Democratic Convention in Boston, the help that Disney gave to putting on the convention, and the free tickets to the Lion King. Thank you.
First of all, I'm not aware that we have a lighting problem at Disneyland, but there are a number of cast members from Disneyland here who I'm sure can look into that issue for you. I actually believe fully what I said earlier, as you'd expect. I think Disneyland has never looked better. And that is a testament to an unbelievable job that's been done by the people who work there. To your second question about manufacturing in China versus the United States, I want to make clear, even though there was a proposal made to the contrary, that we do not own factories in China. However, as you suggested, Disney product is manufactured in China, as well as many other markets outside the United States. We also sell our product in countries around the world, so a lot of the product that's manufactured outside the United States is actually manufactured for those same in the territories that we sell that product. But you're right, we do manufacture significant product in China that is brought back to the United States, and that's done primarily because it's a great resource for a product that we feel is high enough in quality to put the Disney name on it at a price that is, generally speaking, less expensive than what it may cost to manufacture in other markets. We still manufacture a significant amount in the United States, by the way, but we found that given how much we need to source around the world of goods, and it's significant, which is, I think, good news, we have to look to many different places to manufacture those goods, quality levels and prices that we feel make sense for the company.
I just want to comment. I thank you for your remarks, but I should clarify that in 2004, I served as a television commentator with my good friend Senator Dole at both the Democratic and the Republican conventions. Station number four.
Hi, my name is Gerhard Zeck. I'm a shareholder from the city of Orange. And I would like to ask, with the development of the Anaheim Resort area, has there been any thought given to including the monorail as a transportation system throughout
the resort area. And in addition, since there is a development going on for an additional, I think they call it Point Anaheim, are there any plans for enlarging downtown Disney? Thank you.
To my knowledge, we don't have any plans, nor have we considered using the monorail to do more than it currently does, which takes people around at least our properties pretty effectively, and the fact that it goes through the new hotel, I think, is fantastic. But we don't have plans beyond that to either non-Disney properties or to outside the proximity of Disneyland. Your second question, I don't believe we have any plans in that regard as well.
We have time for one more question, station number 8.
Good afternoon. My name is John Burnett, and I am a guest of a shareholder, also an annual pass holder, also an ex-cast member. Disney California Adventure is a fantastic park, but I hear rumors of the change in the front of it, removing the California word, the Golden Gate Bridge, and the sun. Is this true?
Well, we have development underway to make a number of changes at California Adventure, and some involve the entranceway and the first experience that guests have, but I'm not going to get more specific than that. We want to surprise everyone.
Thank you, Bob. Station 7.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this time, I'd like to make a motion to adjourn.
The motion is approved. That concludes our meeting, which is now adjourned. We thank all of you very much for your patience and for your continued support.